Hi, everybody. I'm Amy. This is my wife, Maggie. Hello. And together we are Thinkathema. And this is our series 10, out of 10, where we attempt to rate everything in our collection 10 games at a time out of 10. So this is the second episode where we have rated Roll and Write. So
specifically Roll and Write.
Specifically Roll and Write. Yes. Flip and Writes. Sometimes cut things up and write if you saw episode one.
Yes.
There's many different variations and we have many of them in our collection. So looking forward to going through another. This is not even 10. This is 11 because there are a couple here from the same family.
Cheated a little bit and added a bit of extra. But who doesn't, you know?
11, out of 10.
Who gets angry about a bonus?
A bonus game.
Yeah.
Anyway, let's get started with the first game. The first game is a tiny, tiny little one called Quinto. And this game has similar DNA to Welcome To, if you have played that before, which we spoke about on episode one of the 10 out of 10 Roll and Write. Wow, that's a mouthful. But in Quinto, everybody is given a very small sheet of paper and a pencil.
Very tiny.
Very tiny.
Just like a teeny
little. See how tiny this game is?
Yeah.
And there are three different dice. And these dice are orange, purple, and yellow. And you get to decide how many of those that you want to roll. And why that matters is because in this game, you are going to be summing the values of the die that are rolled, the dice that are rolled. And you're going to be placing that value in one of the three rows, which are each one of those colors. So the color dice that you choose is going to dictate where you can put that number because of the different colored rows. But
the color rows are allowed. Yeah. So they give you an option. There are more options. More dice, more options.
Exactly. Mm. But you're also summing the value. So the more dice you have, the more likely it's going to be a higher value. And that's important because depending on what you roll, you are trying to place the numbers, i.e. the sum of the dice rolled, in ascending order from left to right.
Yep.
So on each of the rows, you need to have ascending order, which means you're playing that little Welcome To guessing game where you're like, oh, that's a pretty low roll. It's a five, but where should I put that? Am I going to roll lower than that?
Yeah.
Yeah. So you're trying to think about the spacing. You're trying to align them in sequential order. But this game has a little twist where it's kind of like Sudoku in the way that you have to place the numbers because left to right, they need to be ascending, but the rows also overlap each other and the numbers in the column need to be all different numbers. So you need to stagger your three rows slightly differently.
Yeah.
And everybody is also going to be doing this simultaneously. So there is one active player that's making the choice of what to roll, but then everybody gets to choose whether they also want to add that number to their sheet. If you have no place to put that number because it's illegal to put it there.
And you're the active player.
If you're the active player, you have to do it.
You
get a cross and you can only have four crosses in this game and every single one is worth minus 5 points. So there's a few different ways that this scores. The cool thing about it is if you can fill an entire row, you get to score the highest number in that row. So that's another incentive to have a really high, most right number.
Fill everything in and
fill
then
everything
have a
in.
Strong top number. Yeah.
Yeah. And also there are some special columns where if you filled in all three numbers, then you also get bonus points too. So it's just a very easy to explain game. Very abstract, no theme. They don't even attempt
The theme, I think, is like, and this is something that you pointed out to me, is to win. See how it's like, it's in red?
That is
it's
not
highlighted.
A theme.
It's just win.
If that's the theme.
That's as far as there is in terms of theme in this. And I did not see that. The win is,
Excuse me, if that is the theme, then that
that's
is the theme of every game in our
that's
collection.
The theme of, that's the theme of your life.
That's the theme
it's
of life, is to win. So that's Quinto. I love this little game, but I love Welcome To. So this is no surprise. But for me, this is just a quick, easy game. It's very travel friendly. It's a 7.9 for me.
This is actually quite high for me as well because it's just, it's very clever the way that they've managed to make something so small, so simple to teach, but yet so crunchy and so layered. So it's a 7.8 for me.
Ah, nice.
Yeah.
It's Quinto. The next couple of games are from two designers that actually have a series of games. So there's Fleet the Dice game, there's Three Sisters, and there's the incoming game that made it to my most anticipated game of the year, Motor City.
Yeah.
So we're going to talk about the two that are in our collection already. So let's start with maybe Fleet the Dice game, since it came first.
It did come first.
Would you like to talk about
them? So in Fleet the Dice game, we are fisher people. Like, we're out on our, we're going to be getting, well, rolling dice that will determine the type of mollusk or fish that we're going to be out to get. And then as we go through it, we're kind of going to be obviously crossing up, marking on that particular track, and then unlocking licenses, so like fishing licenses and launching boats, which are actually the ones that are going to be allowing us to catch those fish when there's a fishing round. So there's that part of the puzzle, but then another part is you've actually got the wharf and the harbor, where there's almost like little not mini games, but it's a different type of comboing, or things that will give you, open up other abilities or allow you to do additional fishing rounds or things like that, or just give you either bonuses or just points, like points at the end of the game for it. So it's a really interesting sort of, well, you're the one who connects with this more than
I know. I feel like you're underselling it, because what's really great about this game and what people love about this game is the ability to make combos and to really elongate your turn in a really satisfying way. And the reason for that is, along the way, you are collecting coins and you're marking coins off a tracker. And every time you collect 5 coins, you're actually getting a star. And the star is like a, hey, you can pretty much cross off anything else you want when you hit this star. And by doing that, you're like, okay, I've got a star, so I'm going to cross off something over here, and that thing over there gives me a free action over
trigger
here,
something else,
and then I'm going to do this and this and this, and now I've crossed off something in my harbor, which is allowing me to fish when no one else around the table gets to fish. And so you just, it's really satisfying, because you can pull off these really big combos. And I really like, what I like about this game is I like fishing, so I like the theme. But I really like how you can focus on different types of crustaceans or fish. So for example, there's a lobster kind of column, and if you're focusing on the lobster column, you're going to be unlocking better licenses. So you have a lobster license, and that's going to get upgraded, and as it gets upgraded, you get more benefits of that type. And then also you are unlocking more lobster boats.
Yeah.
And when a fishing round comes around, a fishing occasion on every second round, it's going to fill up all of your boats. And so there's this really satisfying thing of, ooh, how many boats can I unlock by the time we go fishing? And then just being able to cross off a fish on every one of those boats is really fun. Super relaxing game. Very, very chill. And interestingly, I didn't love this game when we first got it. Like, I liked it, but I think expectations were high. Everyone was really talking about it a lot. And I was like, oh yeah, it's fairly like relaxing, but wasn't complex enough for me. In my old age, I think I'm getting more and more attracted to relaxing games that I can play with a cup of tea and not stress myself out too much. So this has actually gone up in my estimation over time. For me, it's a 7.6.
How did I give Fleet? Fleet is one of those games. I give it a 7.2, because it's one of those games that, like, I enjoy it, but for some reason I'm similar to you in that I expected that I would enjoy it more. I don't mind fishing. I've sort of gone off it a little bit in general. Like, now usually Amy will go out fishing. I'll be like, I'll stay home, I'll do other things, and then, or I'll sleep in, because usually fishing day is like, get up at very much crack of dawn, sort of day. And I don't know. So I think from a theme point and things that you're doing, I never really connected all that much with it, because it's also more like it's commercial fishing. Like, you're launching all these boats to all of this. Not like, you're out on the, with the one fishing rod sort of thing. So, for that reason, that's
something else that I like about this game, I'll just add, is that not only is it comboing individually, but I really like the fact that there's always one more dice than the number of people, and so everyone chooses one, and so everyone's doing something different, but then there is one dice left over that everybody gets to activate, and it always feels like a fun bonus thing that you get to do, and everyone gets to do. So, yeah, that is Fleet the Dice Game, and then the follow-up to that
Three Sisters, they share a lot of DNA in terms of, like, yeah, the way it sort of works. You've got the two sheets, you've got the main area. So in Three Sisters...
Hold on, but it adds... A rondelle.
It does add a rondelle, yeah, and a bit of like an action selection thing. And so in Three Sisters, the theme is all about the Aboriginal or Indigenous agricultural practice of that they call the Three Sisters, which is the combination of growing, I believe it's beans, corn, and pumpkin together, because they all kind of have synergies in terms of, I think, like the root system of one helps the other one sort of thrive. And so you're going to be growing, again, so you've got these six different plots of garden where as you're picking when you're doing your dice drafting, numbers 1 through 6 will determine which of the plots of garden you're going to be either planting in, and so starting some of your crops there, or watering, which means that you get to actually grow all of the already planted or already started sort of crops. Then additionally to that, as Amy said, there is a rondelle with particular actions in them that will allow you to do things like either, you know, more watering or more planting, or activate things like the shed. So you've got a shed area with a lot of different options of different either elements or things that will give you, again, bonuses or
allow your actions more powerful.
Yeah, or some of them will just give you a truckload of points as well. Then there's also your goods. So you're kind of have this, which is kind of like the equivalent of the coins in Fleet the Dice Game, where you're kind of tracking these goods, and then you can exchange those goods for other kind of bonuses when you go to the farmer's market. So there's the farmer's market, and then you've got an apiary, and you've got the sort of fruit area or orchard kind of area with different fruit. There's a lot going on.
There,
so it's like, if you thought the Fleet sheets were busy, I feel like these have even more stuff in them.
Yeah, I think like the most satisfying part of this game is the garden itself, and the fact that you do need to plant things before you water them. And so it's kind of always a decision of, should I plant more things before it rains? Because when it rains, it affects everybody around the table, and everyone's going to water every single plant in every single area of your farm. Did I say farm? Is it a farm?
Yes.
Orchard?
Yeah.
No. Yeah. And so everything gets watered, but then you need to have as many things planted as possible. So it's kind of like Fleet, because in Fleet you want to have as many boats unlocked before everyone goes fishing.
Yeah.
Here you want to have as many things planted before everything gets watered.
Yeah.
And I really like that. There's also some dependencies in the game where you can't, just like in, you know, the theme, you can't plant beans until you've planted corn, I believe.
Yeah.
And then also if you can get the sequence of pumpkins happening, you get to unlock other bonuses. So there's a lot going on. For me, interestingly, I used to like this one more than Fleet because, you know, when it arrived, I was like, oh, this is exciting. It's another layer because it has the rondelle and it's more complex. And again, as I mentioned, these days when I grab a small box game, I kind of appreciate that they're a little simpler. And so now the rondelle element, while I still enjoy it, it creates a layer of complexity because you're not just activating the dice that you're drafting, but also you've got to remember, or you've got to look at, like, what is the action on the rondelle as well, because you're activating both. I find it easier to lose track of what I'm doing in Three Sisters.
I agree,
They did add a little part of the sheet where you can put in the stars that you've earned so that you can cross them off a little bit easier, but I still find it a little bit harder to keep track. So for that reason, I gave Three Sisters 7.4.
Oh, I actually gave it a 7.5. So close, but I'm higher. I definitely like this one more than Fleet. I like the theme more, and I actually do enjoy, even though you said that you kind of prefer the garden sort of bed bit, I actually really love the shed. I'm always like, ooh, what else can I get? Like, yeah, I can get this thing or that thing. And yet I always forget the things that I've unlocked. Mm-hmm. So I do kind of wish there was an easier way of remembering. And I don't know if,
it's a lot to keep track of.
It is a lot to keep track of, but I actually really enjoy that. that. And I do love the synergies between, like, you know, you unlock, like, I think it's like mason jars. And so then every time you, if you unlock your mason jars, then when you, get fruit and when you're like activating your fruit, you're kind of turning them into marmalade, which then gives you a good.
Marmalade.
Jam, I guess. Which then gives you a good. And like, so I enjoy thematically, I'm much more invested in this.
I love that your mind went to marmalade. You just added like a thematic layer. You're like, marmalade.
Isn't that a thing? Like
marmalade. It is. A very specific type of jam.
I think it's actually explicitly in the game.
Marmalade.
I don't know if it says marmalade. I think jam, marmalade are like exchangeable, interchangeable in my mind. I don't know why. I don't actually know the difference. You know, they say like marmalade, peanut butter and jelly. So it's like jelly, jam, marmalade. I'm always like, it's just.
I feel like this, we're going off the rails here, but marmalade is a specific type of jam that is like orange based.
Ah, and mind blown. There you go. So no, it's not marmalade. It's jam.
I do not like marmalade.
I don't mind it. Yeah.
Okay, cool. moving on. So this is a series of games by Wolfgang Wasch, which is started with this one. So we have two here.
Clever series.
We have number one, which is Gachon Clever, which is basically, the translation is that's pretty clever. This is the third one in the series called Clever Hostre or Clever Cubed. Mm-hmm. There is a second one called Twice as Clever, which we do own, but I cannot find. It's somewhere.
This
I
don't is know, when you know drawer, you have a problem cupboard. With, when you have too many games too many in games. Too many places.
Yes.
And we've loaned it to someone.
Maybe. Anyway, so let's talk about these games together because they're fairly similar and they definitely build off each other. There's also a fourth one, which we haven't purchased yet, but I want to check out. But anyway, so Gachon Clever is a very famous, a very abstract roll and write game. And it's clever in the way that it allows you to create combos. So it's got that similar feeling to the ones we just spoke about, where you are trying to really have this long turn where you're getting to do lots of stuff. And the way that it works is interesting because there is an active player, or the person whose turn it is going to roll all of the dice. So they're all different colors. And each of the colored die refers to a different part of your sheet, a different puzzle, if you will. And you're going to be rolling all of them and selecting one, and then re-rolling all of them and selecting another, re-rolling them again, selecting a third. So on your, when you're the active player, you're going to be selecting three dice. However, when you're drafting from that pool of dice, any dice that are lower
guaranteed
than the one you selected are going to be removed from the game and given to this other pool, or placed on this little plate
on the silver platter, to give to other players,
for the other players who are referred to as the passive players. They are going to be able to select one of the leftover die to place on their sheet or to use on their sheet. So basically you are looking at this pool of dice and you're thinking, which one do I want? Because which is the part of the puzzle am I trying to work on? But the problem is if in that first roll you choose a six, you're losing all of the other dice and you could lose so many that actually you wouldn't have a second or a third turn. So you've got to be really careful about that. And when you're the passive player, you're just sitting there waiting for them to finish their turn. So then you can choose what goodie you want to cherry pick from their leftovers. And this game is really fun because you are trying to collect, I suppose you're trying to activate things within these different puzzles to get bonus dice, to get bonus Markovs, and each of the different colored sections at the end of the game is going to score. And then there are also these little foxes that you can collect. Mm. And if you get a fox, which is usually at the harder part of completing one of the puzzles, you are going to get the score for your lowest scoring colored section for each of those foxes. Mm. And so you've kind of got to balance as well each of the puzzles to make sure that you're generating enough points.
You don't want to neglect any one area then if you're going to go for that fox's strategy.
And each of the puzzles have different rules, like they might need to be in ascending order, or you might be trying to cross off rows and columns. Mm. They all work very differently. I won't go into that. But the fun thing about this game is everybody gets this game and says, you know what, I did pretty well. And then you realize that people aspire to get a score of 300 in this game, and that can make you obsessed because it is really, really really challenging to get to 300. So much so that I downloaded the app, which is also excellent, and was playing it just nonstop trying to get to 300. It is possible, but it's really, really difficult. But super, super fun. I really like this one. I gave it, the original Gashon Clever, an 8.
I give it an 8 as well.
There you go.
Yeah.
It's just
no theme.
No theme.
But it is, like, to no me, theme. It's like the original Combo-tastic offer, where it's like the whole point of this is for you to feel clever because you're like, haha, I did this and it triggered this other thing, which then in turn triggered this other thing. And so you just feel like I am incredible. And then, yeah, you look around the table and you're like, oh, everyone feels that way.
I'm not that incredible. I got a score of 150 and but I'm not
cool.
That clever.
Like, it's good when a game makes you feel, it's satisfying.
It is. And yeah. So introducing Clever Cubed, which is the third in the series, three of four. And this one takes everything that we just spoke about. It works in exactly the same way. You're drafting dice in exactly the same way, which is why we've just thrown it into this video as well, because all it does is it changes up the puzzles and it makes them quite a lot more complex, because now there's puzzles that require you to, you can only cross things off if it's the first dice that you've drafted out of the three, or the second or the third.
Yeah.
It puts restrictions on that puzzle with, you know, what the passive players are allowed to put there.
Yeah, if you're a passive player, then there's only certain boxes that, you know, for some of the colors that you'd be able to, put that into. Yeah.
There's one that I quite like where, you know, it starts with a 7 and the next number has to be +1 or -1 from 7. And so you're kind of building out that way. Yeah. So it's just like little twists that make it quite a lot more complex. I prefer the simplicity of the original over the third one because, you know, I think if I played this one over and over and over and over again, which I did at one point, then I would want to play this one. But because now this, you know, we rarely play these or get time to play them, I'm always going to reach for the original.
I agree. Yeah.
Because this one's just a little bit hard to remember how all the different puzzles work. So for
Clever Cubed,
7.4 for me.
Whoa, that was quite a
significant drop off.
Mine also dropped off a little bit, but not only a little bit. Mine's a 7.8 for Clever Cube because I agree. It does make it more challenging. So it's like if you have sort of exhausted your that's pretty clever, then yeah, this is a good level up. But
I think we just look for different things in smaller box games because I'm all about like the speed at which I can get to the table and the speed at which I can teach it to someone.
Yeah.
And I think you're more like this, you know, your experience and you like quite a complex game. So I feel like that always kind of.
Yeah. But, and yeah, in this one, like, I feel like Clever Cubed is the more complex game. And yet I prefer that.
It maintained its score a bit better for you. The more complex one. Mine dropped.
Okay. Yeah, it did. Yeah. I see. Yeah. I see what you mean. Okay.
Yes.
All right. Okay. So next one over here.
Snack time.
So this is a cute little game that we backed on Kickstarter, and I really enjoyed the theme of this. Like the theme of this, you've got monsters that live in the sewers and are trying to make their way through the sewage. So you're going to be rolling dice, and that's kind of giving you the pieces of the network that you're going to be connecting out onto the piping network of the sewage that you're going to be connecting all the way out to the manhole or the exit point so that you can eat pedestrians as they're walking past. And so it's such a quirky little game. But as you're going through the game, what the dice are going to give you is, well, one, allowing you to build up that network, and two, little upgrades or enhancements for your monsters. So it's like different symbols, which are going to correlate to the symbols that are going to be required in order to eat some of these pedestrians as they are quite literally walking past or sliding past. The cards kind of move on a conveyor belt type format. And so those, very cleverly, those pedestrians will have kind of like requirements of symbols on either side. And then they match with the cards that are on their sides as well. So if you manage to get a connection of your monster all the way through the sewage network and out to the manhole or the exit point where that pedestrian is, and your monster matches the symbols, kind of has the skills to eat that pedestrian, then they will. You get the points. The downside is sometimes some of these pedestrians will raise more suspicion, which is a bad thing. So, and you can't decide not to eat. So it's like if you can't eat the pedestrian, you have to eat the pedestrian. Mm-hmm. The other thing is that sometimes there's going to be traps that will spring up and land in a particular exit point. And if you're connected, if your monster is connected to that, sewage exit point, then you will take damage as well. Very, very simple. Cause again, like all the different pedestrians that you're eating, they have points, and then all the other kind of negative things will take points away from you. So, but I love the artwork as well in this one. I really like the, yeah, the drawings of the monsters and the, and the pedestrians.
The, the illustrations are really cool. I love the theme too. It's very like quirky.
So quirky.
So quirky. For me, the game is a little bit too simple for my taste. Like it is a very, I think it would say it's like quite family friendly because you're building out a fairly simple network, which you can also connect to each other. So I was quite efficient at working out how to connect all four monsters to Amy a made system.
A mega network that then immense, like every time then it means that it's very easy
To
eat anyone anytime, any place.
But I still enjoy my time with this game. It's a little bit simple for me. I probably would move it on to a household where they're going to be able to play it like a small family friendly weight. So I gave it a 7.
I give it a 7.3. I enjoy it. But I agree. It's probably sitting on a bit of a simpler or easier sort of complexity than what we tend to tend to play.
But super cute. Love the theme. Check it out. That is snack time. The next one is a classic as well called Railroad Inc. And a lot of you would be familiar with this game. But if you're not, in this game, you are simply creating a network on a map of highways or roads and railroad or rail track, if you will. So tracks and highways. And you are going to be doing this simultaneously with everybody else around the table. You are rolling four core dice, which have different network pieces on them. Sometimes it will be just road, sometimes just railroad, sometimes a mixture of the two. Ultimately, what you're trying to do ideally is to connect all of the exits that are around the outside of the grid of your map to each other. So you're trying to create the biggest network that is connected to the most exits. You're also trying to create the longest piece of road that you can and the longest piece of railroad or track that you can as well. And then on top of that, there are some expansions that come with each of the different colored boxes of this game. So if you've noticed this game around, it comes in a variety of things. It's also a mega Kickstarter pack that has all the different expansions. But depending on which color you buy, it includes four additional dice, sometimes some cards and things. But in this case, the blue one comes with two mini expansions, which just add in two additional dice that you'll be rolling and allow you to draw different pieces. In this case, there's the, I think there's lakes and rivers in this one. But ultimately, you are trying to build out this network as well as you can. At the end of the game, you're also going to get negative points if you leave pieces hanging. So there's a road to nowhere or a train track to nowhere. That's not a good thing.
It's like that government just didn't get to complete the project and then they ran out of budget. And then the new government's like, no, no, we're going to put our investment in this other area. Yeah. That's a problem.
That is a problem. So you don't want to be doing that. So don't start pieces of track late at the game and if you can't connect them to the network, basically. Yeah. So Railroad Inc. is very, the vibe of this game is very chill. A lot of people love this game because it is just very mindfully, you're drawing, because you're drawing the track and the road, that is very peaceful. It feels like, yeah, it feels like you're building out something, but it's not too stressful. And everybody is doing the drawing the four dice that get rolled at the same time. So it has that nice, just like, I don't need to worry about anything. Just like look at the next four and draw them onto my map and then look at the next four, draw them onto my map. Very cruisy. For that reason, I did not like this game at first. And that is like, I felt bad because so many people love this game.
So many people love this game.
And I was
like,
I don't know if this game is for me.
Yeah, I'm going to agree, but for different reasons. It's like, it's not the chillness of it that I didn't connect with. It's just like, it just feels so abstract because it's just like, well, and I don't really feel like I have a lot of, technically,
it
I was going to say
not more abstract than the games we've just been talking about, like Gacha and Clever.
I know, but it's like I think when it's abstract plus network building. So, like for example, we just looked at in Snack Time, just because like Snack Time is a very it's a much simpler version of the network building, but because it's got that whole thing of like, you know, I've got like, oh, it's trying to eat a pedestrian, and you need to have like, yeah, there's a sense of meaning and purpose behind this, but also like, oh, you know, you can get a trap, you get like all of a sudden now I'm invested and engaged.
There's no passengers. There's no trains. There's no cars.
It's very just like you're looking at a blueprint, and it's like, I just don't connect with it. So and the fact that I am terrible at it, it's like, I'm terrible at it. And then I always leave a million roads to nowhere. Yeah. It's like, I don't know how not to.
I'm not good at it. But as I was going to say, though, again, over time, this has grown in like for me. So it would have been pretty low down my list of role and rights to begin with. Now, when I play it, again, I think it's the older age. It's the fact that we play so many complex games all the time. This is a nice reprieve from that. I like it. It's a 7.4 for me.
It's a 7.2 for me. Because, again, it's just, I think it's a good game. Like, I don't think it's a bad game, but it's just not a game for me. Because it's like,
I'm surprised it's that high, honestly, because she's always like, why am I so bad at this?
Yeah, well, you know, I'm not going to blame the game because I'm bad at it. But it does impact.
What a terrible design.
Yeah.
Okay.
It's not the design's fault. It's my fault.
The next game is a big roll and write. You can see it's just massive, and this weighs a ton.
It's solidly packed.
It is solidly packed. This is Hadrian's Wall by Garfield Games. And Hadrian's Wall is a game where you have two player sheets and they are quite large and there's a lot going on. And what you're trying to do thematically is you're trying to build Hadrian's Wall to protect yourself from the incoming Picts invasions. And you're also building out your civilization at the same time with different types of citizens and different types of buildings that are going to help you score points and create amazing combos. And in this game, the coolest thing about this game, I think, is that the things that you're spending are physical resources. Yeah. So at the start of every round, you're going to decide on a few things. So there's 6 rounds in a game, I believe. And at the start of each round, you are going to be selecting an end game goal or an end game condition, scoring condition. In the early parts of the game, you're like, what do I want to work on? Mm. At the end parts of the game, you're like, what have I already achieved that I can score some points for? So you're going to decide on that. And then the other card, because you're choosing from 2 cards, the other card's going to dictate which resources you get, as well as a communal card that's going to be revealed, which will give you a whole heap of resources as well. All of those resources are different colored meeples, so actual physical wooden meeples, and also little pieces of stone brick thing that you're also going to be
collecting. Kind of building block.
Yeah. And then you get to spend them. And when you spend them, you can mark them off on different parts of your sheets. And the really cool thing is, this game is so combo laden that when, for example, I might use a yellow meeple to cross off something on the citizen track, which then gives me a purple meeple back. And so this is constant like, okay, I spend that and then I get this back and then I spend that and then I get this back.
And if you're Amy, it's like 30 minutes per turn because it's like incredible optimization. I'm like, dum, 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 dum. And then it's like,
It is very satisfying. But still going. But also, you have to think about what is the sequence in which I want to do these things in order, well, if you're me, you do, to think about like, okay, how can I elongate this turn and cross off as many things as possible and optimize the way that I'm doing that. At the end of each round, there is going to be an invasion and that is going to attack you from different angles, either directly in front or to the left or right of your wall. And depending on where you've placed emphasis in building up your wall, maybe you're going to protect yourself or maybe you're going to take damage in the form of negative
disdain,
but also negative victory points at the end of the game. There's a lot going on here, too much to go into, but essentially, if you distill it down, it's the amazing feeling of having physical resources to spend, and it's so combo-tastic that if you are someone who likes to elongate your turn, it's just so satisfying in that way. It is a very much a head-down solo
very quiet experience, but everyone is very invested in, you know, what it is that they're doing, and you just kind of hear the pieces being exchanged, which also makes it very easy for people to potentially make mistakes because it's like you're kind of put and no one is really checking
on you.
So if you have a bit of a group that has difficulties with being honest, that could be a challenge.
I like this game when it's just Maggie and I. This is definitely not a game I would pull out for a group of people because there's no social mingling. It's very It's very antisocial, in fact. It's probably one of the quietest games that we have because you're so focused on what you're doing. Hadrian's Wall, though, you know, I like a high level of interaction, but I love the design of this game. I give it an 8.2.
Mm-hmm. I give it an 8.3. This is actually, this is in my top of even solo games because it's a great, again, it's like there's very little, if any, interaction really with other players. Yeah. So it's like it becomes a very great solo experience as well. I think, interestingly, it's one that I loved how big an experience it was that I could sort of sink my teeth into as a roll and write, but also those tangible physical resources. It just, good. It adds so much.
So great. I mean, it does make it like the world's largest roller, right? But, and heaviest certainly, but worth it. Worth it.
All right. Let's go to the Isle of Cat Explore and Draw. This is the roll and ride version of the Isle of Cats. And so very similarly, we're going to have a boat in which we're going to try and get our polyomino-shaped cats. And we're going to be trying to draw them onto the boat so we can rescue them out of the island that I believe, I think is it on fire? Or it's like there's some kind of evil captain something or other that's coming.
You're thinking about the other game.
Yeah, the follow-up. Yeah. But anyway, so in Explore
Race to the Raft is the game that you're which everything's on fire.
Everything is on fire. The series. I am still traumatized by all the fire. And, like, that's a co-op. Anyways, so in Explore and Draw, you're going to have this this grid of different cards representing either the different color and shape cats that you can get to put onto your boat, or particular lessons, or the lessons will often relate to combos or things that you're going to aim for end game points. And so you're going to choose a column of that from that grid, and then those are the ones that you're going to be drawing or collecting and drawing onto your boat. You're going to have different color pens that are going to obviously relate to the different families of cats. And as you may remember from the Isle of Cats, if you play the Isle of Cats, a lot of it is around the coverage, making sure that you have families together, so you're linking cats of the same color together. There's also rats on the boat that you're trying to cover up because they end up becoming negative points. So theme wise is very, very similar. It is a very kind of true implementation of the original into a draw and write.
A flip and write. There's not even really. Yeah. Anyway, so everyone is everyone is choosing at the same time, and you're choosing a column of cards. It's a 4x3 grid, the island. Mm-hmm. But what's cool about it is you also have these special abilities as well that allows you to break the rules slightly. So maybe there's one where instead of taking a column of cards, you're taking a row. And I'm saying taking, but you're not taking anything because everybody can draft, if you like, the same column or the same row if they're using their special abilities, because the way that you collect the lessons or the end game scoring conditions is you simply mark them off on your sheet. So
it's
rather than in the original game where you're drafting cards, this one everyone's picking them simultaneously, so you can have the same things that you're collecting, you can have the same cats that you're collecting. So I think it's a really clever implementation of the Isle of Cats in roll and write form. It feels very similar, but for that reason, it also feels very similar. And so I have to think about, do I want to play Explore and Draw or do I want to play the Isle of Cats? And it's a weird comparison because they're so different mechanically. But I do tend to prefer the physicality of Isle of Cats. And you can see Isle of Cats behind us. We've got all of the stuff for Isle of Cats. And for me, if I'm going to have my friends build out a boat of cats, I want them to feel like they're building out a boat of cats. So this is a really clever implementation for those who don't have that game. I don't know if I need to keep this because we have Isle of Cats.
Yeah, I also found it a lot harder, like spatially. And I feel like I'm usually pretty good. Turning, when you're going, how am I turning this? Because you don't like, and a lot of times you're like, sorry, can I just borrow the card for a little bit so I can try and figure out how I would draw this? Whereas when you have the physical tiles, you just kind of grab it and you're moving it around and going, yep, that's how it fits.
Yeah.
So I think for the type of very simple kind of polyomino drawing type thing, I would probably go to one of the other polyomino drawing.
Yeah, I agree. And I like that it came with the different colored pens, but I would suggest getting new, thinner better coloured pens for this. So what did I put down? Explore and Draw, I gave it a 7.3. I love the Isle of Cats like franchise, but for me, I'd rather play the...
I give it a 7.3 as well. Yeah.
Okay, so that is Explore and Draw.
We've made such a mess these games.
Everywhere.
Are you going there? Or I'll go here. I'll go here first.
Okay.
Let's do this one. So Astra. So Astra is the... I believe this is the first game in with from Mind Clash Play, which is sort of Mind Clash games looking at making more accessible games. Obviously, Mind Clash do like the really, really massive games. Like Cerevia, Perseverance. What else? I can't even think right. But like always very, very massive, complex, long games. Astra is going into the, well, you know, this is a roll and write. It's a lot more accessible. The whole theme of this is you're stargazing, and so you have these beautiful tarot-sized cards that have constellations in them. You have these crystals that represent stardust, and so they become kind of like your currency to then, as you're going around in turns, you, from the constellation cards that are on the table, you're going to help contribute to a section. So you've got these dry erase markers that draw on the actual card themselves and your own color, and so you start getting a combination of different colors from all the different players around the table as the constellation is being completed. Whoever manages to complete the constellation gets to gain the card, but everyone else who contributed gets boons or bonuses, benefits for having contributed. And these could be things that either help you be more powerful throughout the game, or can just be points or things that are good at the end. If you win the card, you don't get those bonuses, but you do get to get points from the card at the end. There's sort of like this combination of depending on the different color symbols that you get, but also they all have actions in them that can be exhausted. So they give you abilities during the game as well. So it's a fairly simple, very, very relaxed, perfect sort of game for any level of player, even non-gamers, perfect one either at the start or particularly even at the end of a gaming session where you're like, oh, we don't really want to go home yet, but we don't really have a lot of brain power to do a lot more. And so stargazing, beautiful. Like,
yeah, it is.
Beautiful way to wrap it up. Yeah.
Very accessible. They definitely achieve what they set out to do. For me, it's a little bit too accessible. It's a little bit too simple for me. And, you know, too much positive player interaction where I'm giving other people stuff. Gross. No, that's not the reason. It's just... it's a little bit light for me. I gave it a 7.
What did I give Astra? I gave it a 7.3. Again, like it's a game that I actually really enjoy it. Like it is very light though. So the reason it's not higher is because it's like it's something that I'll only kind of play if it's like, yeah.
And it's very beautiful as well.
Yeah, it's quite beautiful. I wish, I get it because it's, you know, it's stargazing, and so the colors are a bit more kind of dark and muted. I tend to like really bright sort of stuff, which...
Remember earlier in this episode where I said that I like simpler ones and you like more complex ones, and then I just completely... Use the opposite rationale.
Then we're like,
don't listen to what we say.
Yeah.
We don't know what we're doing.
Guaranteed. We will contradict ourselves.
Within the same video.
Within the same.
And not even like in cross videos. Breath,
really?
Yeah. The last game on this list is one that we've talked about the channel. We did a two-player run through on Rado Run Through as well, if you want to go and check that out. But Twilight Inscription is the epic roll and write. That's what
it
epic
says it.
Roll
yeah.
and write experience because it is based on the game of Twilight Imperium, which is a game we've never played. It's a 4X game that takes basically all day.
It's too epic an investment of time required and space.
And
so,
too much space. Yes. We are not a big fan of space.
It's an epic ask, I would say. Yeah.
But Twilight Inscription is the roll and write version, and it is epic because you have four giant sheets that you are working on. And the way that this game works is really interesting because it's event driven. So you have the speaker in the game who is going to be revealing one card at the beginning of each round of every round. and they're going to reveal it, and it's going to tell you what this round is going to entail. Most of the time, it's going to give you some symbols that you're going to choose one of your four sheets to activate and then apply those symbols in however they play out in the mini game that is each one of those sheets. And then we are going to roll a communal pool of dice, and you're going to be able to apply those to that same sheet that you've activated. And what are you doing on each of the sheets? eats well. You're kind of going out to explore different planets. You're increasing the network that you're able to go and explore. You're also collecting resources and generating resources. You're giving yourself more influence and voting power. Mm. And then importantly, you're also battling with your neighbors. So there is one sheet that is essentially dictating the military that you have, and you're going to be able to create these starships that are going to kind of be your attack power whenever the battle card is revealed out of that event deck, and you're going to look at how much power you have versus the person to your left and to your right, which are going to help you get bonuses. So that is a really interesting kind of interactive element of this game. But for the rest of the game, you're mostly just competing with yourself by crossing things off and getting lots of combos. So you might not only be able to cross off one thing that, you know, you complete a row and then it gives you a bonus symbol, which you can then apply somewhere else. But also you can unlock different techs on each of the sheets that are going to make you more powerful, and additional dice as well. Yeah. So when we roll the dice, there are the core dice that everyone gets to use, and then there are these additional dice that you only get to use if you've unlocked them on that sheet that you've activated. So there's a lot going on here, lots to think about, lots of paths to victory. So if you like kind of specializing in something, this might be a good game for you, because you can really focus on one or two sheets and go at those sheets.
You usually need to harder. Like pick two. So two sheets that have good synergies, and then I call this like neglect one. I find that usually no matter what I do, it's like I always find it's like, oh, I hardly even touch that fourth sheet. Yeah. Probably to my own demise. But
I really like it. There's also asymmetric factions as well. So you do get a faction that is going to help you in some way focus on a particular area. So that can help you decide on what you want to optimize. But we both really like this. For people who don't like space, it is fairly abstract because it's just a huge network of craziness. Oh, should mention, speaking of craziness, the neon
chalk markers
that come with this are the best and the worst of times.
They're super cool because it's like so bright against this sort of really dark,
cool.
Yeah. But then the cleaning.
When it gets on your hands and when it gets everywhere, it is like
an orangey mess.
It is a mess. And if you let them dry for too long, it's almost impossible. Yeah. Like it takes a while to clean off all the sheets. But this is a very meaty experience. Mm. It's like an hour, I think, at two players for us.
Yeah.
An hour plus if you're playing with a large group of people, because you can't really start the next round until everybody's finished what they're doing. So that it does create this
Experience. If you have particularly if you have any AP prone players, around. Yeah.
Even if people are like, which sheet do I activate? You're like, just
pick one.
Just choose one. Please. We're gonna be here all day. Yeah. So that was Twilight Inscription, and I gave that a 7.5.
Wow.
I thought when I first played it would be even higher. But for me it's just harder to get to the table, and that does feed into my rating.
For me it's an 8.2. I really enjoy this game. I really like a meatier Roll and Write experience. And I feel like of all the games that I've played, and I don't tend to connect with Roll and Write, Twilight Inscription, Hadrian's Wall, and Dungeons, Dice, and Danger would be the ones that I'm like, yes, this is a good meeting experience. I can sit down and feel like I'm accomplishing something. I do love the look of it. I like that there's so much stuff in the four sheets that it means that every like subsequent games I can go out and try and let me focus on these ones, this game or this. So I love that. Yeah, it gives you a lot of flexibility to try all sorts of different things. So I do actually really enjoy this game. Yeah.
Wow.
There you go.
Who would have thought it?
Who would have thunk it?
Yeah. We hope you enjoyed this video of more Roll and Write. So if you did, please hit like, subscribe to the channel if you haven't already, and we'll be back with more board game content soon. But otherwise, bye for now.
Bye.